Welcome to a rather happy edition of Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Brighton and Hove Albion and Crystal Palace, a rivalry forged in fire, yet named after a motorway.
This week at Palace, we ended our three-match winless run with a convincing victory over informed Brentford. And because we're through to the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, we've got fixtures coming out of our ears before Christmas. We'll discuss it all.
And this week at Brighton, we put three past Leeds, and after 180 years and over 3,000 games, Albion record a clean sheet.
Plus, we'll go over all the latest club news and preview the upcoming fixtures for Palace and Brighton.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Neil.
Ah, Andy, how are you?
I'm all right. You mentioned a happy podcast. Is this because Brighton won? Because
I feel like I've been a little bit against the tide over the last few weeks. We've both had a little bit of a bad run, haven't we? So I'm trying to stay positive, mate, as positive as I possibly can. And plus, I feel a little bit better this week. I'm not as flu-y, so that's always a good start.
That is good. That is really good. And the fact that you're happy makes me happy. And the fact that you're aware about the fact that you're miserable makes me even happier. So there we go. Well, look, yeah, as you say, it's a happy podcast. We've got two wins out of two games this week. And we've also got quite a lot to discuss later on in the pods. We're going to be talking about the day that is now referenced as Seagull Eagle
Day. It's official, Seagull Eagle Day, yeah.
Which is coming up on Sunday.
I'm both excited and nervous at the same level.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because this whole Seagull Eagle Day thing is now a much bigger deal in my head than it even was prior to this podcast, yeah. Because I've now got to answer to their results to you afterwards.
Same here, mate. Same here.
So, yeah, we're looking forward to talking about that. And of course, we'll talk about all of the other club news later on in the pod as well. But Neil, I think you should get the party started because, let's be honest, mate, you had a team of, Titan proportions coming to Brighton.
Oh, here we go.
You haven't kept a clean sheet since Jesus was alive. This was your moment. How did it go, Neil?
As I said in the intro, it had been a long time coming. And yes, we did keep a clean sheet.
So congratulations.
If anything, just to shut you up, I'm glad that happened. 3 points in the bag, obviously, is very important as well. Shall I just go through it? Shall I just run through what I felt like the game happened?
Just do me a favour. Whilst you do, though, don't explain it as if you just beat Barcelona, yeah? It was Leeds.
Do you know what, mate? Honestly, I'd love to pick it up, but you're absolutely right. Look, lineups first, okay? So obviously, Hörsler didn't keep the same lineup. He never does. It's just not part of it. I think he thinks it's some sort of rule where he has to change at least one player every time. But to be fair to him, it was the same lineup that he started against Spurs at home.
Okay.
It was the same lineup bar one that we played at Man United. So I'm thinking that we're starting to see a settled side.
Can I ask the big question though?
Yeah, go on.
What was the formation?
Yeah, back to same old, same old.
Interesting. Okay.
So back to the 4-2-3-1 formation. And this time we had a settled back four, I would say, of Wiefer, obviously, at right back, Duncan van Heck with Ferdi Kadioglu at left back. The defensive midfielders, Baleba with Ayari next to him, Rutter in the sort of the 10 role, Minte back on his favoured right-hand side, Diego Gomez getting another start, because last time he started there he got injured within about 5-10 minutes. He's actually given another go at left wing, with obviously Danny Welbeck up front. And it does start to feel like a settled side in the league, that one. I think you're starting to see, and I think it's fair to say the first 10 minutes, really, you started to feel like it was a settled side, because the play, that the way we were passing, et cetera, started to look promising, at least, anyway. And I think, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, Leeds were not good, right? So it was a relatively easy, straightforward match. At no point through the whole game, maybe maybe after we've scored our first goal, they tried for the next sort of 10, 15 minutes. But generally speaking, at no point did I really feel that Leeds were going to come back into it and worry us.
But jokes aside, Neil, these are the games that you have been known to stumble across
now
and
that is a really
slip
good
up,
point. Yes.
i.e. beat Man City 1 week and then, you know, lose to a promoted club. So I think that we know there are no easy games, but also you can underestimate people, can't you?
I totally agree, mate. And I was actually going to say that later, that, you know, this is exactly the type of game that we normally don't get over the line.
Yep.
So the fact that we have won, the fact that we won 3-0 is a positive sign, and I'm clinging on to that.
You do that.
Thank you. So look, let me just cut through a few of the things that happened through the game, particularly obviously in the first half. As I said, we did start rightly. We had the first sort of 10 minutes or so, high press, trying to get the ball back, recycle it as much as possible. And the actual sort of first goal as such came from that concept of Leeds trying to play out, but actually us putting the pressure on in the corners, recycling the ball and getting it back through. And I think if you remember the last few weeks, I've talked about Yankuba Minte and how he's still got a lot of learning to do. He's a great player. He's having a good start to the season. But I sort of mentioned a few times how I don't feel like he's using Mats Wiefa enough. He seems to be using him as the decoy constantly on the right wing. He's cutting inside and Wiefer's making these runs and never getting used. Well, actually on Saturday, for the first time in a while, Minte did his cut in, but this time, I don't know if you saw, it was a lovely cheeky little lob over the back four where Wiefer was actually running past him onto the overlap.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderfully sort of caressed pass over the top.
Caressed.
And Wiefer got hold of it. And a trend really through the whole game, the first goal indicated what we were going to be doing, which is getting to the byline and putting it across as quickly as possible. And lo and behold, there was Danny Welbeck to tuck it in very nicely, very coolly, I would say. And we were one up. And if I'm honest, it was nothing less than we deserved. It was a good start. And at that point, you're sort of waiting to see what Leeds have in them. And they tried. They tried sort of for the next sort of 20 minutes maybe to give it a go. They got on the ball. And to be fair, they held the ball. They kept hold of the ball very well. And their formation, because they're like a 3-4-3, they've got this sort of like trying to get the width. There were times where we dropped back into our sort of five at the back, where Minte would sort of turn into this right wing back and Wiefer would tuck in. And we did really well. We didn't really give them any opportunity to create a really obvious chance, you know. And I think that was really good to see. We didn't necessarily go all out attack though either. And I think the one thing I was going to point out about the first half, and I thought it was quite interesting, that we got to sort of maybe the last 10 minutes of the half and Albion are in possession and Leeds are sort of sitting back very Crystal Palace style, waiting to see if they can possibly nick a little pass or intercept. They did it once and they go up the other end and we thankfully cut it out at the last minute and they don't get a chance. They don't get a shot on target or anything like that. So we win the ball back and we've got the ball again and we're pushing up. And the fans and the supporters in the stadium start getting really annoyed, and they, because Brighton are not pushing forward, they're not attacking wholeheartedly.
I heard it on the highlights
reel.
It's
really interesting, yeah. Right? And I'm looking around, and it's stupid, I know, but I'm having an argument with 30,000 people, right? I'm standing there and I'm saying to people, why are we annoyed that we've got the ball? We're in complete control of the ball. We're 1-0 up. There's 4 minutes to go before half time, and we're not trying to over push it and over pressurise.
I could probably answer that, Neil.
Yeah.
Because you can't keep a clean sheet, mate. And that the rest of the 29,500 people, or whoever many it was, know exactly what normally happens. And that's not me putting the foot
in.
No, I get it. It's that kind of that thought in your head that goes, do you know what? We're not comfortable until we're 3-0 up.
But there's a really good example that happens. This pressure happens in the crowd and you can hear it. And Van Heek tries this pass that he shouldn't probably try, or he wouldn't normally if there wasn't people screaming at him.
Yeah.
They turn over the ball, they go down the other end and they create a chance. And I wouldn't say they almost score, it wasn't that close, but the point is they created a chance from us feeling like we have to over-engineer an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's that really, really difficult balance, I would say, between the situation that we're in now where, as you've just said, we've created these problems for ourselves where the crowd and everyone are worried that we're going to concede a goal. So therefore, we have to go for a second. And it was just a really strange moment. Having said that, most of the players on the pitch didn't go with the crowd. They didn't listen to the crowd and they kept calm and they got to 1-0 at the end of the first half. And I think at that point, we saw out the problem. You know, it was done, it was over, and we roll on to the second half. The second half comes out. We don't make any changes, by the way, but we really did take control then of that next phase of the game. Mm. And I think we limited Leeds to incredibly small chances, not really anything at all. In fact, they didn't actually register a shot on target until about 84 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So we were totally in control in that sense. Not necessarily in control of the possession. We gave it to them, but they didn't do anything with it because we kept it really tight. And you know, Albion's second goal was a lovely sort of breakaway goal almost in some respects, where Leeds had had the ball. They tried to get on top of us. And I think it was Van Hek who played the ball over to the over the top of the left wing back where Minté is steaming down the wing. And it's a lovely goal. You know, he gets to the byline again, this sort of concept, I think very much a tactic for the day, was get to the byline, a low cross into the penalty box. And Jorginho Rutter is there and he just dummies it, goes straight through his legs. Gomez pops up, tucks it away lovely, 2-0. And you could feel at that point the release of stress from certain people and a relaxation, even on the players as well, I think. I think them feeling 2-0 up suddenly was a very different scoreline against a Leeds that hadn't really created too much.
It felt like a really well-worked goal as well. They knew where Gomez was, and it wasn't a fluke.
No.
So I would get the impression that if I was sat there, which I never would be, by the way, but if I was sat there in the stands, I think that would give me a level of confidence that this game is in our hands and we've got our own destiny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it did feel at that moment, and I think, to be fair, the next sort of half an hour felt very comfortable for Brighton.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was only a few minutes later the third goal turns up and, you know, Albion working hard to sort of chase down Leeds again at the back. This is where their really sort of high press came into play a lot. Jorginho worked real, real hard on Saturday. And I think he had a point to prove against his old club. And I think he was doing it as quietly as possible, but also at the same time showing them that they shouldn't really be booing him, which I found really strange that they were booing him. He wins the ball just outside the box. And obviously he goes into the box after beating the defender. And again, yet again, he gets to the byline, cuts it back, and guess who's there again? Gomez steaming in. And, you know, it was clearly a tactic all day, as I said. And, you know, getting the byline and cutting it back. They'd obviously seen something, and it worked every time. So the rest of the game, I think we created, you know, a few more chances. I think Gomez had a chance for a hat trick. Ayari had a really good shot that got deflected, and the keeper made a fantastic save. And then, you know, it felt quite comfortable. And it's an odd feeling sitting at the Amex, feeling like the game is done and we're actually going to see this out, you know. Fabian Hörsler felt like that as well, I think. He made changes over the last sort of 15, 20 minutes where he brought on the two Greek lads and Tommy Watson as well. And suddenly we had a fresh front three who were then chasing down everyone again. Even goes so much to say, I think we got to the last maybe 2 minutes of the whole game and he brought on the two academy lads that we had on the bench because our bench is a little thin at the moment. We had Joe Knight, who's a 20-year-old centre midfield, and we had Areola as well, who is a 18-year-old left winger who we got from Manchester United, I think. And they'd been with the club, with the squad for the last couple of games. They've been on the bench and things. And it was nice to see them get on for their debuts. I think it was literally like 2 minutes they got on the pitch, but it's nice for them. And I think that showed how comfortable Brighton were in that last 15 minutes. I think, you know, Leeds got their only two shots on target in the last 5 minutes, but that was more us than them in some respects, tiring, I would say. So I think we beat the team in front of us. The team weren't great. But as you said, Andy, on another day and in previous lives, that wouldn't have been as easy as that. So no. I have to give them credit.
And mate, look, Welbeck scores again, third consecutive game, right? Yep. 4-3. Obviously, Gomez had an absolute cracker of a game. I loved Mintes through ball for that first goal.
Yeah,
that was superb. Mm. Really, really was. And I think the biggest takeout that I get out of all of this is you've played five games now at the Amex, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
You've won three, you've drawn two,
yep.
and you've lost nada. Mm. Right, and not only that.
Well,
look at who you've beaten. Look at who you've played there. Fulham, yeah. Man City, Tottenham, Newcastle, and Leeds. Yeah. Right.
I mean, if you extend that out to last season as well, we're actually unbeaten at home in the last nine league games.
It's mad.
Yeah, it's we're starting to create that. I think the away form is the worrying form, if I'm honest, especially with what's coming up.
Well, that's why I'm glad you're playing us at home.
Yeah, I know, I get it.
Because honestly, looking at them stats that I've got up in front of me now, if Seagull Eagle Day was being played in Brighton, I would be a little bit concerned.
We are two very different teams currently, away and at home. And I think that is something to obviously work on. But generally speaking, look, if I was to summarise the game, I would say a good performance, a cohesive performance, which is something I've been asking for. And obviously that doesn't come easily, but when you don't change the side too much, you obviously start to see that. Leeds were really poor, but again, it was a tough test that we had to get through. And I think the clean sheet is ultimately just great to stop people going on about the fact that we haven't kept a clean sheet. Look, stats-wise, XG, we actually had an XG of 3. I think it was 2.99, I think our XG was, which is great for us at home. I think that's a good number. We had 14 shots, 7 of them on target. As I said, we only limited Leeds to 2 shots on target. So we finished the weekend in 10th position, 15 points, 10 games, obviously. And yes, you're right. Overall record this season currently of 1-4, drawn 3, lost 3. So, I'm relatively happy with that. And I think if we play the same side next week, which would be a first, we'll have to wait and see, obviously. Who knows? Who knows? But we can talk about that.
Someone to get injured on Friday.
You know it's going to happen. No, even more than that, Andy, I think it will be more a case of Hörsler possibly overthinking it and changing something and tweaking something. And that's my biggest concern. I think at the moment, I go on about it every single week because I really feel it's important. Until we can see the same side 5, 6, 7 games in a row, that's when you start to really understand whether Hörsler as a manager and as a tactician and the players themselves are working together.
I mean, mate, look, honestly, and I hate to say this, you guys have turned
on,
a corner. No, you've turned a corner. Your home form is epic. You finished the weekend 2 points off of second.
Something like that.
I think a little bit more now because there's been further games being played.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're up there with the pack. I think you're sat in 10th, I think.
That's right.
As it stands right now.
Yeah.
So you've beaten some really big teams. Yes, you've had a couple of stumbling blocks, but you've got your first clean sheet, which I think is a psychological thing.
Mm.
And I think going forward, if you have a look at your next 6 games, taking away your next game, which I think is going to be an interesting one,
sure.
And I'm not saying it's a prerequisite, I think it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
You've got some decent winnable games coming up. They're not easy games, no easy game.
No.
But they're the type of teams you want to be playing as opposed to the ones right at the top.
I agree. They're games where the other team will at least try.
Yeah.
They'll come out and they'll have a go. So I know I totally agree with you.
I think you're in a good position, Neil, honestly. And I think by the time we get to early December, I'd be very surprised if you're not in that kind of top eight bit. And I think given the fact that Palace have got a million games to play in between that time, I'm a bit concerned that I think, let's see.
Well, let's talk about Palace because I think that's enough talking about Brighton for now. It was a good win and we wait and see what happens next week. But before that, Crystal Palace played exactly the same time, 3 o'clock on Saturday, and they played Brentford. We all know what happened by now. So 2-0 to Crystal Palace.
You ruined it.
Sorry.
It's like going to watch Titanic, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Sorry.
Look, no, jokes aside, it was 2-0. And look, going into this game, Brentford have been a little bit of a bogey team for us.
Oh,
a little
right.
bit in
I
the past. We've been known to play out lots of bore draws with Brentford. Last season, that wasn't the case, and they actually got the double over us last season, believe it or not. And we've only won one match in the last eight, head-to-head, drawn five, lost two. Our last win, mate, came back in 2023. So Brentford, for us, turning up to Selhurst Park is not what I would class as an easy game.
Okay.
Plus the fact that they're on form and Brentford were unbeaten in six, right? Also, what I was really intrigued about, and I'm sure a man of your football prowess would have been watching this game from an impartial point of view.
Oh, of course, of course.
To find out what was going to be happening in the Battle of the Long Throws.
Well, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because that, of all the clubs that we've been looking at this season, of all the clubs, that, I mean, the new fashion is the long throw, but Brentford have been doing it for the last four or five seasons, to be fair to them.
Yep.
Palace have been doing it for a long time or not?
We've been doing it since Glasner's come in.
Right, okay. So it's been around.
It's been around, but obviously Brentford are the long throw experts, right? They've scored eight goals this season from long throws, directly or indirectly.
They're the modern day Stoke.
Yep, absolutely. And you can understand why, because I feel like, I mean, half of their team is clearly like a BFG offspring or something. It's just unbelievable. They make Peter Crouch look small. Obviously, the two sides that have put the most long throws into the opposition box this campaign are Brentford, 47, and Palace, 38.
There you go.
So it was going to be decided, I believed, prior to the game, on long throws. Mm. What I didn't see come in was that it was going to be decided on long throws, but Brentford scored a long throw, but in their own net. So we'll talk about that later. And obviously from a Palace perspective, we hadn't won in three. We'd come off that big long run. Mm. We needed a response today, really. We needed to get a bit of a... I think we needed to see the status quo again. We needed to see that solid defence. It needed to kind of go back on track, ready for our major fixtures coming up, European football on Thursday, all the other bits and pieces.
Okay.
So four changes for Palace.
Four? Do they have four players to change?
Well, let's be honest, we do, because we haven't actually got that many people injured, but obviously they were changed because of the cup game from Liverpool, right?
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
We've pretty much gone back to type, i.e. Mateta, Richards and Mitchell back in the squad. Yeah. Lerma has come in. Walton's not injured, but ill at the moment.
Oh, okay.
He'll be back. We've been told under no uncertain terms he's back for Sunday.
Don't hurry back.
He is back.
You get better soon, right? Don't listen to them. If they want to rush you back, you take your time.
Yeah, but Lerma was told by Glasner last week he wanted to play the Liverpool game and start the Liverpool game. And he was told, no, you're playing the Brentford game.
Right.
So it was a tactical move from Glasner. And it would seem to be a tactical masterclass, because this was the perfect game for him in terms of the way that he plays.
Sure.
And he was superb, mate.
Yeah.
He was genuinely superb. Assisting both goals.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
And I think from a midfield masterclass of backwards and forwards, playing box to box in an unconventional way, right. i.e. pressing and kind of closing people down. He was just brilliant. He was really, really good. And you know when you're like, you see a change from a manager and you go, he meant to do that, and that player's playing for that reason, and that's being thought about, and I like that. Keith Andrews kept the same starting lineup that achieved the 3-2 win over Liverpool, and that was the Liverpool which had all the players in it,
as opposed
to the Liverpool we beat.
That was a good quality win.
Let's talk about the game quickly then. First half, probably key moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had quite a bright start. Pino tested Brentford early on. There was this kind of deflected shot and a free kick into the wall. So Pino kind of looked sharp and he looks like he was going to do some damage from the offset. Pino, from the games that he started this season, I can kind of tell in the first 10 minutes whether he's going to have a game where he just falls over and gets knocked off the ball, or whether he's filling up for it. It looked like he was going to be up for it today. Kamada, again, was superb. And my son said to me, like, halfway through that game, he was like, Kamada hasn't done a thing wrong. And ironically, that was the moment that he did do a thing wrong. One pass went awry. But he kind of had a bit of Adam Waterman in him.
Okay.
In terms of beautiful forward passing, great pressing, just an intensity into his game and a vision that just worked perfectly. I feel like this game was right for Kamada as well.
I suppose also if you've got Lerma in there rather than Wharton, I suppose you probably realise that the creativity is falling to you a little bit more in that sense.
And it did, and he was brilliant. And he unleashed a swerving effort across the goal that everyone in the stadium just gasped as if it was going to go in. It didn't. But it was a statement of intent. Mm. I think Brentford's early pressure mostly came from corners and predictably long throw-ins.
Yeah.
But to be honest, again, like, it was the Palace of the 19-match run that we were watching. Yeah. There was nothing that really looks like it was of any danger.
I don't think, when you think about what Brentford can offer most of the time anyway, I think when you think of then Palace and how they deal defensively, you don't think that Brentford are going to get the best of Palace physically or anything like that. So, you know, what else have they got? They haven't got much else at the moment now, the latter-day Brentford. They don't have that Mbeumo. They don't have the Wissers, you know, the ones that would just absolutely speed through. So if you can be strong with them and you can defend well and stoutly, which Palace, let's be honest, one of the biggest successes they've had recently is their ability to defend.
Yeah.
You know, I never saw this being a concern for Palace.
You've got to match them with their strength and intensity because they're big lads. And it becomes apparent when they stand next to the ref and you're like, oh, hang on, there's a good 2 foot difference there. And that's not even an exaggeration. It was mad. Saar then probably had our first golden chance when he broke free down the right. And it was brilliant. It was perfect Saar. It was as if he was playing Villa, right, or Liverpool. And instead of firing across goal, he opted for a pass. And this happened a couple of times. Bless Saar. It's the opposite to every other player. I feel like he needs to be more selfish. He'd double the amount of goals sometimes.
Felt like he sort of second-guessed himself right at the last minute. I thought he was going to shoot, and then he sort of waited and waited and waited and then tried to put it across, didn't he?
And we are known for that, right? But this is what I'm saying about the chances that we create in the opposition box.
Yeah.
Them stats are insane because sometimes we just need to shoot. And I think, that was Brentford's first real scare. Obviously, it was Saar's wrong call, but also you can't, you really can't criticise Saar for that. It was what it was. Then on 30 minutes came the goal. Gaye got fouled just inside the Brentford half, and he spent a lot of time inside the Brentford half again. Another brilliant game from him. And Pino, did you see Pino's like looping free kick?
Mm.
It was inch perfect, absolutely perfect. Lovely to watch. All the way over to the far side, Lerma jumped high, well above the defence, which again, Lerma's not your tallest of people.
No.
He out-jumped everybody, got the ball all the way back across, and Mateta was there to do kind of this wonderful backwards header, which completely just took the keeper by surprise. And he meant to do it.
It was a fantastic finish. It was a proper old school centre forward. It was Alan Shearer.
Finish.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great head.
Yeah, and it was his eighth goal of the season, 4 in 2 games. And it felt like they were the type of goals that we've been scoring on that run, right? So Selhurst Park was like, okay, we're back. Glasner was G'ing up the crowd after the first goal. It felt kind of, there was just a really good atmosphere. And even in the OAP stand where I sit, with all the old men who are normally quite reserved, you know, clapping every other clap as opposed to all of them and only standing up when there's a clear-cut chance. You know, there's etiquette, right?
Yeah.
It felt like them rules kind of went aside a little bit and there was a momentum behind the team, which was just lovely. Saar then straight away after that, the intensity of the stadium went up. He then had another wonderful chance just after that and he volleyed it just wide, right? And honestly, I haven't seen a team look on the ropes so much this season as Brentford were at this point. There was I don't know how to describe it. There was a nervousness on their passing. We were pressing them high. I mean, when you've got like your central defenders pressing the opposition in their own box, you've got to wonder what's going on, right? It's an insane way of playing. And obviously, we were risking a lot, right? But we were really confident in our system and the covering of where everyone was. But, mate, Brentford couldn't breathe without them being outplayed. Now, I don't know whether you saw, I'm not quite sure what minute this was, but there was a Brentford player and you had two Palace players on this Brentford player in the corner flag. And they just, the intensity of it, it was a clip that they were sharing on the social media from Palace.
Right.
And then they got the ball back on it and they made him look stupid. But it's just that kind of summed it all up for me was, you ain't getting that ball. And if you got it, we're getting it back.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of hard work that that team has to go through in that formation to do what they do is fantastic.
And it's the celebration, like when we get the ball back or when it goes out of play or whatever it would be. Mm. And, you know, like the defender high-fives the keeper when he makes a good save.
Sure.
That's what the outfield players were doing to each other when they get the ball back and when they've done something good. So it just shows you their want to succeed is just there. Anyway, half-time, 1-0. Let's go into the second half then. Look, we talked about this. Much of the pre-match chatter was about the long throws. As I said, it felt inevitable that one of them would lead to a goal. Thankfully, it was Palace who struck first. Just 6 minutes after the start, Lerma launched a trademark throw, causing absolute chaos. And Brentford skipper, I think it's Collins. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nathan Collins. He misjudged his header completely, scoring a wonderful headed goal into the bottom corner. It was lovely to watch. and it was one of them own goals that could have quite easily been wearing a Palace shirt, right? It was just... If he'd have meant to have done it, it would have been perfect.
I mean, you said it right at the outset of the whole pod. I mean, it just feels like a goal that Brentford should have scored, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those goals that you just think that's exactly the kind of trouble they're expected to put in the opposition penalty box.
Yeah. And what do you do after scoring an own goal of such proportions, Neil? You turn around and watch the replay on the LED screen cringe.
Oh, yeah. That's the downside of having those big screens.
Mate, and it was brilliant to watch. It was so funny. It really, really was. And then, as I said, you know, just like it was at the end of the first half, even more so now, it truthfully, and you know this because obviously I've done a lot of match reviews and I've been like, oh, nail-biting, oh, a bit unconvincing, whatever. In this case, it just felt like we were in total control. So much confidence, stringing pass after pass after pass together, giving them the ball back and then just like with intensity, they don't know what to do with it. Yeah. All they could do was just pass it back. There was that beautiful moment where Mateta ended up in our own half, he got the ball back off of the player at the centre circle and ended up running it all the way to our corner flag because he was being pressed and he was like, you ain't having it back. And he just worked it all the way back to the corner flag and then we got a goal kick out of it. And it just showed you the confidence, which was like, do you know what? Do what you want, guys, but you ain't getting through. It was lovely. And then, of course, straight after that Brentford goal, where Collins scored the own goal, he, as if scoring an own goal wasn't enough, he then gave Saar the ball. He gave Saar the ball, who went one-on-one with the keeper. Saar beat the keeper beautifully, like a typical Saar goal, through on goal. And you would have put your house on the fact that was going in. And it clipped the post.
It was it was just like funny to watch the whole crowd because you saw what was happening and it was like, this is so obviously now what's going to happen. It gets past the goalkeeper and you can just see everyone jumping up. And the fact that it hit the post, I mean, it was funny, but at the same time, I just couldn't believe he'd missed it.
But then also it hit the post and went nowhere near the other two attackers. No. It was one of them ones where you're like, ah. Oh. And obviously if we were losing at that point, you'd go,
that would be very different, yeah.
But anyway, look, Brentford were hanging on by a thread. Truthfully, here's an honest bit of review and feedback from the game. You know when you feel like you're not getting the calls from the ref?
Mm-hmm.
I've really felt for Brentford.
I really
felt for Brentford. And I'm not saying that they got an injustice, but I did very much feel that every time the ref blew that whistle, it went our way.
Mm.
And again, it probably went the right way, but you would be really frustrated. And I think that's how this game went for Brentford. They couldn't get a crack in the game. They couldn't get a foothold in the game. They couldn't do anything with the ball. And every decision was going against them. Anyway, look... Brentford's best chance was Reece Nelson, who nearly came to Palace, funny enough, over the summer. And he came on, I think he was their fourth substitution. They were trying everything at this point. He curled one towards the far corner, but Henderson, whilst making a good save, actually, still made it look very easy. Mm. It was one of those ones where he was almost taking the mick, right? It was like, it was a good save, but got up very comfortably and went, oh, mate, no worries. And that was really their only, they did actually register two shots on target in the official stats.
Yes.
That was their only actual shot.
I know what you mean.
On
yeah.
target.
Yeah.
The rest of them, the other one was a catch from Henderson.
The stats, I was looking through the stats earlier and sort of trying to work out the tail of the game in that sense.
Yeah.
When you look at it. And what surprised me, and I looked at the highlights and I thought the same thing as even watching the highlights, was that, so Brentford ended up, I think, with 64-65% possession.
Oh, no, I can't understand that.
Yeah. Well, this is my point.
I can't understand it.
You would have expected Brentford, knowing what Palace were going to do, we all know what Palace are going to do, you know, of all the teams, I would have expected Brentford to just sit and not actually have the ball and just give it away almost and just wait to see what happens. But they sat there on 65% and only managed two shots. Well, as you said, one shot really on yeah. target through the whole game. That's a poor day out, isn't it?
Well, I think a lot of their possession, though, you've got to remember the possession stats make you think that it's your go-to thought on possession is, you know, attacking play and mm-hmm. all of that. Their possession stats were us chasing them into a corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Or being, you
or
know,
just letting them have it in near their area and just not waiting until they get over the halfway line.
And them trying to find a way through and not having it. It didn't, this is the thing, because when I looked at it yesterday and I was like, is that right? And I actually went on three different like independent websites to double check that, because I just couldn't, that wasn't the game that I watched, mate. Same with the kind of balls in the opposition box, all that. I don't think the stats really told the story. Mm. It's a little bit like, you know, like the other week when I said, you know, we won the game and I walked out there and I felt like I'd been through hell and back.
Yeah.
I didn't really enjoy it, but I should have. And everyone came out and went, that was the game of the season, you know. And I was like, this one, I'm like, I was calm, I was at ease, I knew we were going to win it. I loved watching us pass the ball round. We did some beautiful passing patterns, all the things. There was an old guy that sat behind me who's clearly 107, and he said to his mate who's about 120, he was like, I've been waiting to see them play like this for my whole life. And he's, and that's exactly what I mean. Don't get me wrong, we weren't playing like Barcelona, it was that system, but it looked good, Neil.
Yeah, and you've got to a place where you have a settled side, everyone understands the tactics, everyone's working for each other, there's a level of camaraderie now as well. You've won a trophy, for God's sake, which means so much to all those players that they know they've been through it and they've come out the other side. So,
and don't forget, even though we've been through, there's this kind of, people forget that we had that lovely run, but then obviously it was like, oh, you haven't won a game in three.
Yeah.
But like, don't forget, very similar to you, right? We've won six and drawn five at home. That's 11 games unbeaten at home. So for me as a Palace season ticket holder, what is it, February, I think, was the last time we walked out there without a point.
Yeah.
So it's still a little bit too good to be true, even though we've had that little dip away from home. So there we go. Look, we're still, I think we're 1 point ahead of you now. And, still are, because we both won. Mm-hmm. And I think we finished 1 or 2 points away from second. And I think since Man City played and all that, it's a bit changed, hasn't
it? Yeah, I mean, ultimately, when you look at the league positions now, it's so close across the whole thing. You know, I as I said to you, like over every week, really, what I'm looking at is that fifth, sixth place. That's where I'm sort of aiming for the target for the season. And if you look at sixth, well, actually, they're both the same. Fifth and sixth are Spurs and Chelsea. They've both played 10. They've got 17 points. So Palace are 1 point behind them. Brighton are 2 points behind them. There's nothing in it at the moment.
To be honest with you, Neil, we are where we want to be and where we both should be, to be fair.
I think you're right.
At this point in the season. My only fear is that with all these fixtures coming up, can we maintain that position as Palace?
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
This is Seagull Eagle, and I suppose we'd have a little natter about a few things. I've got a few things on my list. Anything particular that you want to talk about? Oh, you know what we should start with?
Go on.
The next sacking in the Premier League has already happened. So Vitor Pereira, Wolves. I mean, it's been on the cards for a while, but he's finally gone.
It's not who either of us said. We've got this a bit wrong, haven't we? Because I think mine was the Brentford manager that I thought was going to go first. But and obviously it ended up being Nuno, didn't it? And it now was. It's Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of pleased in some respects because I've put Wolves as my relegation choice. But yeah, it's a strange one. I think the main reason none of us picked him was because he signed a new 3-year deal about a month ago, 2 months ago, right at the beginning of the season. And then they sack him. I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. I think the funniest thing that I've seen so far on that, though, is the fact that, do you know who they're looking to replace him with?
I actually don't, Neil.
So as of the moment, as of recording, obviously it might change, but the top target apparently is Gary O'Neill.
Oh.
So the manager that Vitor Pereira took over from, they're looking like to bring him back, which is crazy. I mean, what was the point of sacking him then, really?
I thought you were going to tell me it was Ange then.
No. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Keep going, Ange. Just keep going around. See if you can manage every team by the end of the season. What else did you want to talk about, mate?
Well, I you end up in this kind of spiral of just, you know, Googling random stuff.
Unfortunately, yes. I know that very well.
Yeah, I don't want to check your history.
Please don't.
I Googled top scorer just to see where we were at.
Oh, yeah.
In the Premier League. And it may come as a surprise to you, may not, that Palace and Brighton are basically second in the top scorer chart.
Second and third. Mateta and Danny Welbeck. Yes, okay. Yeah, good point.
And I'll be honest, I mean, Danny Welbeck is a bit of a surprise in that respect, given the fact that I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. There's a lot, obviously, there's been shouts for him for England and stuff like that. And obviously, Mateta's had a little bit of a run on it because he got his hat-trick the other day. He's shot right up there.
Well, if you consider the fact that Danny Welbeck, I mean, I don't think he scored for the first 4 games of the season.
Yeah.
And we're only 10 in, so he's done very well in the last few. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk at the moment around Danny Welbeck and England. You talked about it a few weeks back to me. You asked me the question. And I don't think my mind has changed. I think it's clear that at this moment in time, but it's a long season, but at this moment in time, he's clearly the best England striker in the Premier League.
Yes.
In that sense. And in a World Cup squad, you generally take 3 strikers with you. And we all know one of them being Harry Kane. It looks a bit like it's going to be Ollie Watkins probably if everyone stays fit. But then that third striker spot could be anyone. Now, you know, Tuchel might go a different way and we can talk about that nearer the time. But at this precise moment, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets called up to the England squad. And we'll know, to be fair, we'll know this weekend. We'll know before Seagull Eagle Day whether he's been called up or not.
Yeah, well, good luck to him. Good luck to him. But yeah, as I say, Haaland, I think, is on 13. And then you got Welbeck, Mateta, Thiago and Semenyo on 6. So let's see how that ends up at the end of the season. But obviously, one of my outlandish start of season predictions, that podcast that will come back to haunt us.
Yeah, we're going to have to look at that at some
point.
And
we'll do every year. my prediction was that Mateta would be up there in the... I was very clear that I didn't think he was going to beat Haaland, but
pretty
I
sure
did.
You said that.
No, I didn't. I said he'd be up there with the top scorers. So let's see. I'm willing to rewind and show you that.
Play the tape, Neil. Play the tape.
And then I think the only other thing that I wanted to talk about was it's quite relevant and current because I think hopefully, obviously, the news broke on this one about 2 hours ago, I think.
Okay.
They confirmed the fixture for the Arsenal quarterfinal Carabao Cup game.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And Glasner's been talking about it in the media. He's had to answer quite a lot of questions about the fixture pile-up at Palace.
Right, yeah. I suppose because you've got Premier League, Conference League, now League Cup as well.
Yes.
Okay.
And that meant that there was a couple of scenarios that could have happened. I think the one that has happened is it doesn't really favour either us or Arsenal, but I think the one that was potentially going to happen would have distinctly favoured Arsenal. So
right.
I think we've got the better of the two options. But I mean, let me explain it. Obviously, as you said, due to the Conference League, the Carabao Cup, and of course the Premier League, we've ended up with games to be played and no time to play them. So as it stands, we'll be playing Arsenal away at the Emirates in the quarterfinals on the 16th of December, they've now announced, right?
Okay.
So that's 2 days after playing Man City at home and 2 days before playing Coops in the Conference League. And then on the Sunday, we'd be playing Leeds. So that's 4 games in 7 days.
What?
4 games. So we're playing on the Tuesday and the Thursday and the Sunday and the previous Sunday. So my question to you, Neil, and I don't know whether there is a thing about this, but yeah, I really thought that there was rules about this, and it's something that Palace, and don't get me wrong, right, I'm not moaning, I'm not doing an Arteta or any.
These are the pains of success, aren't
exactly
they?
Yeah, and that's what Glasner has very clearly said, and I like his approach on this, right, which is that it's, if you're doing well, this is the reward for doing well. You shouldn't look at it as a negative, but also, how are we meant to compete? Even if we had a squad the size of Man City, it's surely not safe to be playing Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Sorry, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday.
So the only rule that I know of is there's a 48-hour rule. That's the only rule that I think officially there is around how many...
48 hours.
Yeah, because if you think about it, old-fashioned wise, but the Christmas turnaround, there was a lot of games used to be over Christmas that weren't so spread out as they are now, and you used to end up with a Boxing Day, and then the Boxing Day was probably a couple of days before the weekend, and so you'd have this sort of like run. And I think the only rule there is that, yeah, they can't be 48 hours between, or there has to be at least 48 hours between them, so hence why you've got these fixtures twice in the middle of a week and then on the weekends either side as well. And that is tough. That's a real tough situation to be stuck in.
It's unfair, is actually, I think, the fact of the matter there.
The problem you've got is, what's the alternative? And the only alternative you probably have is to take one of the Premier League games.
That's the obvious answer.
Out and leave it until later on in the season at
some
point. So who are those two Premier League games that you've got to play? Do you know?
So we got Man City at home.
See, that's the one.
And we got
problem.
Leeds away.
Okay, so the Leeds one is the one, because you would think Man City would really not want to move their fixtures around either, because they've theoretically got a similar problem to you.
Yeah.
But Leeds, you could argue, they're not in the League Cup. You don't know how long they're going to be in the FA Cup. They've not got Europe. So,
and I reckon they'd love not playing us right now.
Interesting.
So I this is the bit, that is really my question, the reason for bringing it up, which is that, why are we in a world that, one, no one thought about this or saw it coming? Bearing in mind, it's not like... we've done a replay of what happened last year, funny enough, to the same team, right? We got the same ploy in the Carabao Cup last year.
Yeah.
They knew we were in the... Well, did they know we were in the Conference League? They probably didn't. It would have been Nottingham Forest's problem if that had all played out. But this was always going to be a problem if the Conference League team ended up in the quarterfinal of the Carabao Cup. And the people that were sat in a room at the start of the season thought, well, let's hope it don't happen. But I still don't understand why at that stage Crystal Palace can't go to the Premier League and go, hang on a minute,
can we
move our fixture? Because I tell you something, if there was a waterlogged pitch or anything else, they'd move it.
Well, we'll
right?
see
You'd
what
have to reschedule.
Happens. I mean, there have been a few dodgy decisions made here and there late in the day, maybe through illness or sickness and all other things as well. So there are other avenues that maybe Palace can take. But I mean...
Get the hose on that pitch.
Yeah, I mean...
get it cooled off.
The problem is, mate, like you said, ultimately, this is the spoils of success. This is the issue. And I hate to say it. Well, no, I don't. I'm actually going to enjoy saying it. It's... the fact that you've got such a small squad is going to be a problem. And again, you're paying the price for not doing enough business in the summer and not having enough players, because actually Arsenal are in the same scenario, Man City, the players that are playing in the Champions League, all that sort of stuff. That's why they've got such big squads.
Oh, look at Liverpool. I mean, that's really paid off for them. but no, mate, you've got a good point. And you know that I wasn't particularly pleased about, I think we need strength in depth. But the only positive out of all of this, right, if you look at it, you've got Man City at home, right? You've got Coops at home.
Yeah.
And then the only real kind of... you've got Arsenal away, but to start all this off, by the way, so that's still London.
That's a
cheap
right?
So you've got Arsenal away in London, you've got Man City and Coops at home, and then the biggest travelling is Leeds away at the end
but
of
it's
it
right
all.
At the end, like you said.
And then it's Christmas.
So
I guess it could be a lot worse. We could be travelling out to Dynamo Kiev. We could be, you know, so I guess the geography of it kind of isn't the worst. They're not travelling for hours and hours and hours. Let's see. All I hope and pray is that we go into that run with a decent amount of players.
Yeah, I agree. I hope you do, because I think you need a fair run at it, and I think it's a bit unfair otherwise. But
when's the FA Cup come into the play?
January.
Crikey. Can you imagine if Palace have an FA Cup run as well?
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm really praying not. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to... Oh, do you know what? Actually, there is one other thing. Not that we usually plug other podcasts on this podcast, but...
Have you started a cooking pod?
No. Oh. Not yet. Not yet. It's on my list.
All right.
Anyone listening to BBC Radio Albion Unlimited podcast, so the Albion fans, obviously, on BBC Sounds with Johnny Cantor and Warren Aspinall, if you listen to that podcast this coming week, ahead of the game on the weekend, you may hear some voices that you know. Shall we just leave it like that?
I'm never going to live this down. I'm going to get eggs thrown at my house.
Yeah. So, the boys from Seagull Eagle will be on the Albion Unlimited podcast too. So get a listen to that and our BBC debut, mate.
Just to clarify, I'm going on to talk about Palace fans. Don't start giving me grief.
We'll see if we can cut that out. That'd be great. Just talk about Albion and then just have Andy coming along going, yeah, I think they're great. And just cut it straight to Albion. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Anyway, thank you for those of you that do have a listen. We really, really welcome the support. So I suppose, Andy, we should talk about the games coming up. Now,
well, yeah, because I'm
really excited to talk about Seagull Eagle Day, but unfortunately we can't talk about that yet. We've got to talk about something else.
Well, we've got another game, yeah. I'm off to Selhurst Park for our second home European game. Hopefully going to be more successful than our first. I think it probably will be,
really?
Is the truth. Thursday the 6th, very excited, 8 o'clock. We are playing AZ Alkmaar. Truthfully, I thought this was a Turkish team. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, really?
It just, maybe I'm wrong. It sounds a bit Turkish, doesn't it? When I did a bit of research, I realised it is, in fact, far from being a Turkish team. Geographically, it's a Dutch team.
They are a Dutch team with lots of history, especially in European football. So, they're a good footballing side. And I know they had a good season last season, obviously, because they got into European football. Where did they finish in the league?
Yeah, they finished fifth. And I think they're flying high in this year as well. They're on good form in the league. And they also reached the Dutch Cup final, losing to penalties to the Go Ahead Eagles after a 1-1 draw. They're regulars in the UEFA Cup during the mid-2000s, obviously facing sides back in them days like Middlesbrough, Newcastle and Everton.
Middlesbrough, I forgot they got into Europe.
They reached the UEFA Cup final in 1980-1981, losing over two legs to Bobby Robson's Ipswich.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, there you go. And they were not, this is a funny fact, got knocked out of Europe by English clubs in three consecutive seasons.
Oh,
so you've got West Ham in 2022-2023.
The cup that West Ham won.
Villa, and then, of course, Tottenham. And Tottenham obviously knocked them out of the Europa League phase in the round of 16 last year.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. So they're managed by Martin Martins. Whoever named him had a good sense of humour.
Yeah, it's almost as good as Neville Neville.
It is indeed. Yeah. Obviously, he was a former player for them. And they've got a nickname. Do you know what their nickname is?
I do know what their nickname is, actually.
Go on, Neil.
And I was really looking forward. And I can see that on the script, you've actually noted it down. And I'm really pleased because I've been talking about the Conference League all year, being the fact that they're a farmers league. And AZ Alkmaar are actually called the Cheese Farmers.
They are.
I love it.
The Cheese
Love
Farmers.
It.
I mean, they don't call themselves the Cheese Farmers. They actually call themselves De Kasboren. I believe I've said that quite aggressively.
I love it. I'm here for it, mate. You keep going.
My Dutch is spot on.
I'm sure it is.
Obviously, there is a reason for that because it references their famous cheese market.
Yes.
Which is the thing. Have you ever been there?
I have, actually.
Have you?
In all seriousness, I have. Yes, that's how much I get around. The cheese market is... Do you know what they sell there?
Cheese.
Oh, you knew. Okay, right.
Nice. I mean, not only about football, this is about culture and food. I like it. So look, how are they getting on so far? They've won one and lost one so far. Do you know who they lost 2-0?
Go on, tell me.
Larnaca.
Well, there's a lot of it going about.
But they lost 4-0.
Oh, okay.
So they lost 4-0 in October and they beat Slovan 1-0 last week.
Right, okay.
So
mixed bag for them as well then, really.
Yeah, I do think though this isn't... We're not playing the frustration of Larnaca this week. Let's put it like this.
Here we go.
If we don't beat Alkmaar on Thursday...
Yes.
We're not going to have a problem with our fixtures for too much longer.
Well, ironically, I mean, the way the Conference League is, you've still got plenty of time to actually, you know, turn it around and stuff, even if you did. But
if you want the easier end of the knockout draw, though, we've got to start winning games.
Yeah, and especially at home. The ones that you do have at home are the ones that you have to really get something from all of the time in Europe.
And don't forget, we've got Strasbourg coming up as well, which is going to be our biggest
test.
That's
a tough one.
And that's going to be right in the middle of our fixture debacle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got to win this one to get, because at the moment, we're doing all right, and I think we're, you know, we've got two home games within a week at Selhurst. It feels like after the back of Sunday, Thursday night is a good night to get to lay our stake in that competition.
And I think, I suppose, if you think about it, they haven't got the luxury of resting people for this game. They need to win it, and you need to have a performance, really. So I wouldn't expect too much of a change side for Palace. I think they've got to go for it. Fingers crossed, you know, gets a few, you know, muscle pulls, they get a bit tired, they get a few kicks, all that sort of stuff. Fingers crossed. That's really what I'm hoping for, that, you know, although you don't really get that from a lot of Dutch teams, but I'm hoping that someone will stick the boot in.
Be hopefully 4-0 up by half time, and then we'll get the reserves on ready to rest them for Brighton. Hopefully. In reality, it'll be 85 minutes before we get a goal, probably.
I hope so. Can we go to the extra time? Can they do that? Can they push it on to extra time? That'd be amazing.
Look, let's see. Looking forward to it. Going to be at the Homesdale with all of the diehard Homesdale fanatics with that, and with my son on Thursday night. So very much looking forward to that and hoping for a good result.
So that is the Thursday, which means that a fixture that we were going to have on the Saturday has moved to the Sunday.
Correct.
2 p.m., live on TV. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the first this season of Seagull Eagle Day. I am so excited about this.
I wouldn't be if I were you.
No, well, I strangely... As I said that, I could see your face go, why are you excited about it? Do you know what? Do you know why I'm excited about it? Honestly, yeah. Is because, so look, obviously it's at Palace, right? It's at Selhurst Park. Last season, that was our very first podcast, Andy. The result of that game, we got in the room and we started talking, and that was the start of this beautiful friendship. That was what it was. It was us having a natter about what had just happened. All the red cards, the goals, the last minute dramas, all of that. And that was our first ever Seagull Eagle podcast. So for a start, it's nostalgic. Second of all, surely can't be as bad as we've been the last few weeks and last season. Palace doing the double on us last season is something that feels like...
Brilliant.
It felt so bad. Like, it felt really rough for us, you know. I think, because if you think about how it's been in the Premier League, knowing you, you've got a stat here somewhere. So if you think about how it's been in the Premier League between the two of us head to head, generally speaking, if you discount last season, it's been relatively even. You win a game, we win a game, we draw. There was a lot of draws over time.
I've got the stats if you want.
Oh, I knew you would.
Yeah. So if we look at the last four, which I'm quite keen to look at.
I thought you might, yeah.
Two wins for Palace, one win for Brighton, one draw. If you look at goals scored, this is interesting, in the last four, Palace 7, Brighton 7. So it would actually have been a draw if we played it all out for that whole time. And of course, the last meeting, as you said, was our first ever podcast, Palace 2, Brighton 1, and that was in April 2025.
No, it was a crazy game. And I think I'm looking forward to the game because there is an element of, from a Brighton perspective, there is an element of, there are shoots of encouragement. Now, I don't think, well, I suppose what I'm mostly concerned about, if I'm trying to be positive on one hand, on the other side, the thing that I'm most concerned about is I feel like this game has come slightly early for Albion, just a few games early. I think if we'd maintained any sort of consistency over the last few games, I'd feel better about it. But because I just don't know what I'm going to get every week, that I am concerned. Having said that, if the team turn up, if we play the way we normally play, I think this could be a fun game.
I think it's going to be a high scoring game.
Do
mate.
You?
I honestly, I think there's going to be goals. And I think it's going to be one of these crazy games.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a crazy game. Cards, injuries, goals, corner flags flying all over the place is my prediction. I genuinely believe that. I think the players are going to be up for it. I think you guys have got enough. I think you've got the players like Minter, who can kind of break through and create some havoc. And I think it's going to be a physical game at the back for both.
I think
it's going to be really exciting, mate, honestly. And if I'm going to put my prediction on it, I'm going 4-2 Palace.
Wow.
Honestly, I'm going 4-2 Palace.
Okay.
And I'm going Sarr and Mateta both scoring a brace.
Oh, look at this. He's all over it. He's honestly, so... Right, okay.
And
I mean...
I really think that that is... Look, you look at when you got one win in five away this season.
Yeah, and that's the concern. We said it right at the beginning. If it was at home, if it was at Amex, I would feel a lot more confident about this game. I think it would be great. The fact that it's away and the performance levels of us this season away from home have been really bad. Like, they really have. If you think about the Wolves game, you think about Everton away in particular, they were really bad. And I know there's been a bright spot where we went away at Chelsea, people will say, as they scream at us, and we did well there. But yeah, they were down to 10 men. I just think this game has come a little early for Brighton. If I'm honest, I will be very happy with a point. I would be very happy to get out of there with a point and just move on and wait until the next Seagull Eagle day. But I think you're right about your point, the number of goals. I think there will be goals. I don't see either team keeping a clean sheet. I think we will absolutely see goals. And, how am I going to predict a Brighton side? Okay, look, if Brighton play similar that they just played, so if they're consistent, which they haven't been, let's be honest, but if they are consistent, I think we are looking at a 2-2 draw. That's what I'm looking at.
Okay.
That's what I think it'll be. But if we play like we played against Wolves, against Everton, I don't even think it'll be 4-2, mate. I think you could be winning 4-0 almost, 4-1, something like that. So,
I'd love that.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
How do you see this playing out from a... Obviously, you know Palace's formation, style of play.
Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to say this.
Your history of playing against that style of play.
Yeah.
I mean, last season's results obviously do tell a tale in that. Like, what do you think is going to happen?
So this is the whole thing, mate, isn't it? Like, if I'm in charge, what would I do is one question.
Yeah.
What does Hörsler do? Well, this is the problem. None of us can second guess Hörsler because we just haven't got a clue. He keeps changing. He keeps changing his mind and doing different things. If you think about earlier in the season, we got the game against Spurs at home where we played a very different style. We suddenly decided to play kick and rush, kick it long, not have the ball, counter-attacking. And it almost worked. We almost did it. And then you flip it on its head and you would have to say that probably the majority of the time we don't play like that. We play with a possession style and we try and take the ball right up as close as we can to the back of the other team and really press and hem them in as much as possible with a high press. If we do that, our normal style against Palace, I think we could be 4, 5, 6 goals we could let in because of the way we're currently playing away from home. And I really wish I could sound more positive, but that's my concern. So if it was me in charge and I was doing something different, I would change our style. I would very much look to contain, not attack, not try and keep hold of the ball, actually give the ball to Palace. Because the one thing you don't want to do as a Palace player at the moment is change your tactics. You know what you're doing and you're great at it. So actually, if you give them the ball and say, I don't want the ball, and Brighton be confident enough to say, doesn't matter if we don't score, we're just not going to let one in. Ironically, that might work in our favour. But are they going to do that? I just don't see it. I don't see them being that brave. And a lot of people will say that's boring. It's not brave. No, it's brave to change your tactic and say, do you know what? We're just going to recognise the fact that Palace are really good at what they do and we're going to try and nullify them.
It's whatever happens, I think that this could be one we talk about for a few years to come, Neil.
Absolutely.
Let's hope it is a high-scoring one just for the entertainment value. And hopefully, Neil, you'll be able to get a ticket and I'll be able to give my neighbour a lift up there.
Whether I get a lift back is another matter.
Oh, well, we'll see what the result is, mate.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think that's about it, isn't it, mate?
I would say so, Neil. That's about it for this week's Seagull Eagle podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
So make sure you follow the show so you don't miss us on the next episode when it drops. And we'll be back next week to, of course, talk all the action on Seagull Eagle Day, plus a rundown of the Palace v AZ Alkmaar game in the Conference League 2. And, well, yeah, just compartmentalise the fear of us going to Selhurst Park. I'm really fearful now after talking about it.
Good. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X, and search Seagull Eagle to get the conversation started.
Drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com,
and we'll see you next week. Until then,
Eagle!
Seagull! Seagulls, come on, boys!